welcome to another podcast looking at the latest exhibition that is currently on in Gawler. And I'm here with Jacinta Weiss, Gawler Culture Heritage Centre Coordinator, and a very, very worthwhile and wonderful job that Jacinta does, organising the and managing Gawler's incredible history collection down under the Gawler Civic Centre in the Culture Heritage Centre, which is a wonderful resource open to the public and anyone that wants to research all sorts of historical matters. Welcome, Jacinta.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here with you.
And Jacinta's here to talk about our current exhibition.
Yes, our latest exhibition is Grit and Grace, Gawler Women in Wartime. And it's a story that came about because we realised that we have a lack of stories about Gawler women. And we started to investigate some opportunities to tell some stories about Gawler women, but also to align that with objects in the Gawler Heritage Collection. And we started from the premise of the Cheer Up Society, because the Gawler Heritage Collection has a number of items from the Cheer Up Society from the First World War.
Well, war really, what, because the men were gone, and it put the spotlight on women and gave women a massive opportunity.
It did. And so that's what you'll see in this exhibition, is the way the role of women in wartime evolved over the 20th century. So we find in the First World War there were certainly Gawler women who volunteered as nurses and served overseas, but there were many women who were left here in Gawler and they were actively involved in fundraising. But by the Second World War we've got women serving overseas, women serving in the armed forces in Australia, in the Air Force and in the Army, but they're also being called up to work in munitions factories, in the telecommunication, the secret telecommunications unit that was at the Gawler airfield. At the same time, they're keeping the home fronts fires burning, they're looking after their families, they're looking after their gardens, which was very important because food was rationed, so you needed to be growing as much as you could. So they really had to evolve in their roles.
And it had long-lasting changes for women, because women started taking on men's jobs and showing that they were just as capable as men.
That's exactly right. So what we find is that there's concern, especially in the munitions factories and places like that, that women wouldn't be able to do the job, and they could do the job. They demonstrated that they could do the job just as well, if not better than sometimes, than men. And what we find after the war is that while some women certainly did go back home and go back to looking after their families as their predominant role, the change had started. Women had demonstrated their capabilities and things started to change from that point.
Yes. And women remained in the armed forces, so that was the beginning of women serving.
They did, and we see that across the 20th century. So as I said, they started out as nurses. By the Second World War, they've got a somewhat expanded role, telecommunications units, administration support. By the Vietnam War, again, we've got a lot of nurses, but we've got women serving overseas as drivers and administration support. And after that, women slowly moved into full combat roles in all of our service, all three branches of our services.
Another aspect of women's involvement, I guess, with the Vietnam War is in the protest movement, which you've also covered.
Yes, we have covered it. So it was important for people to understand that while everybody was supportive of our troops, not everybody was supportive of the wars that the government chose to get Australians involved in. So there was referendums against conscription in the First World War, and they were defeated, so we did not have conscription in the First World War. We did have some conscription in the Second World War where people could be conscripted to the Australian territories. So that meant New Guinea.
Yes.
But by the time of Vietnam, there was a strong anti-war movement, and we have some photographs of the Save Our Sons rallies that were held in North Terrace in the city, and we speak about that in the exhibition.
Because women were very active. Well, Save Our Sons was a mother's movement, basically.
Yes. So, but they were very active in the First World War in anti-conscription.
Yes. And there was big, really heated debates.
There were.
Polling booths.
There were very heated debates. In the Second World War, when conscription to Australian territories was introduced, was a different time. Australia had been under attack. Yes. The Japanese had attacked Darwin. They'd been in Sydney.
Feeling in the Second World War was very different.
Yes. And one of the things that we cover in the exhibition is how people got their information about the war. So in the First World War, people relied on newspaper accounts.
Yes.
The radio didn't come to Australia until the early 1920s. By the Second World War, they're definitely getting their information from radio and families sitting around the radio every evening and listening. But by the time of the Vietnam War, people are getting their information on the television and they're seeing the war. And that's a very different experience, and I'm sure led to different thoughts and feelings about whether Australia should be involved or not when you see it.
I think Hiroshima and Nagasaki changed people's thinking a bit too, the end of World War II, because they saw impact on civilians. And even if they supported the war, there were aspects of modern warfare that people didn't support.
So there's all different of these aspects in this exhibition. There's also a victory garden. As I said, there was a strong emphasis on growing your own vegetables. And while Australians in that part of the 20th century had generally grown their own vegetables, the men had done that while the women were looking after the families. By the Second World War, the women are going to work in the munitions factories, they're looking after their families, and they're doing the gardening and trying to feed their families.
A lot of the hard grit of war fell on the women.
Yes.
Both wars. And World War One, they were knitting socks. They were.
There's a lovely story in the exhibition about Lucy Knott, who made a commitment to knit 1,000 pairs of socks. She got to 770, which was an amazing effort during the First World War. And another lovely story from Williston, where Lucy Chenoweth, who was 5, knitted a scarf, and it was sent over to an Australian soldier at Gallipoli. And he wrote a letter back to her thanking her for her scarf. And we have that letter in the collection, so it's a lovely thing.
They made a big, like the socks, and they were so important to the soldiers.
They were. And we do have some socks hanging up in the exhibition, which have been donated by local serving defence personnel.
Oh, lovely.
So they are genuine.
Right.
Genuine.
From the World War
One? No, current ones. They're woolen socks that they have to wear when they're doing manoeuvres and anything slightly dangerous. They're scratchy. They tell me they don't like them, but they have to wear them. They're not antique defence socks, but they are defence socks.
Well, I doubt too many that were worn in the trenches would have survived.
I don't think so either.
I didn't want them either.
No, don't think so.
No. That would be pretty bad. Yes, they had billy cans they'd send at Christmas as well, and all the women had worked really hard to fill the billy cans and put stories and jokes.
And send foods that would travel well, fruitcake, Anzac biscuits, things that would actually travel well, they would send those over as well. So there was, I think especially by the Second World War, war had touched every aspect of Australian lives. Yes. And we talk about in Gawler how after the Japanese invaded Darwin, there was a real concern that they would come to Adelaide, and that council dug trenches around the main parts of Gawler and around the town so people could, if they came, you know, during daylight, you could just jump into the trench to protect yourself. So the story goes, however, that council after a few months were more concerned about people falling into the trenches and hurting themselves and blaming council, so the trenches were filled in again. It does sound like cancer. So that was considered a bigger risk, that you would hurt yourself falling into a trench than the Japanese coming.
And the impact of, because there was the Malala airfield, there's a lot of soldiers based there.
They
came to dances.
There was. We have a section on war brides. There were 12,000 Australian war brides after the Second World War. One of them was a Gawler lady, Mary Adams. She met a US serviceman at Sandy Creek at a dance. And she got married and went over there after the war. And after a few years, he came back with her and they raised their family in Williston.
That's lovely.
It is lovely.
Yes. And, of course, there was also war brides that just relocated around Australia. It wasn't always overseas.
No, that's right.
And back then, communications weren't what they are now. So somebody moving interstate was moving right away from their family.
That's exactly right. Yes, if you were moving to Western Australia, it was, a long way. Yeah.
Almost another country. And, of course, the war had, World War II in particular, I think, left lasting effects, certainly on diet, and took years for production to get back. So
it did. We had rationing well after the war.
Sometimes
people don't realise that.
No.
But certainly butter was still being rationed up until 1949. And I think that demonstrates women's innovation. We have some free handouts in the exhibition that people can take, and that's how to make toys that were popular during the war, but also some of the recipes, and you know, that involve mock cream, which has no cream because you couldn't get cream. And so they were innovative in trying to feed their families and bake and cook the things that they always had with the ingredients available to them.
And the lack of sugar.
Lack of sugar and tea. So during World War II, they used to call it ghost tea, and it was the third round. So the third round of teapot, of hot water in the teapot on the same leaves, because tea was rationed. And if you liked your tea, and Australia was tea drinking nation then, not many people drank coffee. So people really liked their tea and they had to make it stretch.
You couldn't do that with coffee, so probably
no, that's right, you couldn't. You certainly couldn't.
Okay.
I hope people will come in and enjoy the exhibition. There is something for everyone. There's something for children. There is some audio that people can listen to. There are free giveaways that they can take with them. I think it's an opportunity to broaden your understanding of how women's roles have changed over the 20th century and how people survived during wartime. And then that's always an opportunity to consider where we still need to expand and change and grow as a community.
Yes, there's a lot there. Visually, it's very, very interesting as well, with so much to look at in that. And it covers such a wide shift in culture.
It does.
Between World War One and Vietnam War, there's a big shift in Australian culture as well.
Absolutely.
And how people think and respond to wars. So. Mm. Yes, thank you very much, Jacinta.
Thank you.
And congratulations on yet another wonderful exhibition. It's a lot of work and it's really, really interesting. So,
thank you very much.